What's up, my friend?
What's up, man?
You doing all right today?
Pretty good.
Good. Hope everybody else out there is having a good day. I don't know when you'll be listening to this, but we have endured a monsoon to be here with you this morning. Traffic, all kind of stuff. But, hey, it's for the people, man. Mm. We hope that everybody enjoys today. Can I give a quick update before we start?
Yeah.
So last podcast, we started Western Theology, and I mentioned, just didn't plan it, but it just happened. I mentioned a church sign that I've always seen that, you know, if you remember, it said the, you're welcome, come inside. Okay. Yeah. That sign has been there, I would bet, no less than 3 years. This week, they took it down. And I was like, could it be?
Wow.
That they listen to Saints and Pioneers. We're out here making changes. Or maybe they just said,
maybe somebody said, hey, that's stupid. Let's take it down.
Yeah, that sucks. Let's take that off. But I just found it kind of coincidental. Like, I passed it every day for 3 years. We mention it and we take it down. So, hey, we're just changing the world. One little church sign at a time. So, good stuff.
That's good.
Other news from last week, we mentioned a trivia question. As we often go to movie quotes, do you remember the movie quote, what we did last week?
Come.
Gary on the kick drum.
Gary.
So the answer was the breakup, Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn.
Yeah.
And our good friend and faithful listener, Connor Sunday, got that answer right on Instagram, I believe, and he received a new pocket knife.
Press the applause button.
Yes. Let's see. We're going to test this out. So Connor, this is live. This is all. We'll do it live.
Do it live.
So Connor Sunday. There you go.
There you go.
Our canned applause.
That was a standing ovation.
Yes.
You know, if you listen to that canned applause, there's one person that goes, woo.
Yeah.
But it just does it over and over again. Like, woo.
Yeah.
Woo. Woo.
So if you listen to it backwards, they say, ow. That's just, for any of you out there that want to try it, just reverse it, see how it happens.
Hey, speaking of this Western Theology thing, the book, I was thinking about something I read a while back. I watch a lot of useless documentaries that, like, the history of the bottle cap or something stupid like that.
What's the Burns guy? Ken Burns?
Ken Burns,
If Ken Burns made a documentary, you're going to watch
it. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, Bob Wire is what did away.
You did not just watch a whole documentary.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
It was, I don't remember where I learned this from, but this may be complete bull crap, but I'm pretty sure I read it in a book.
Right.
But Bob Wire is the thing that did away with the cowboy.
Hmm. How so?
So back in the day, you hired cowboys. Mm-hmm. To keep your cattle hemmed in,
right,
and to move them from one place to the other.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they were paid very low pay, and they weren't the cowboys of movies. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, they were like basically pretty bottom barrel kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they lived outside, they slept around a campfire, they smelled terrible, and they weren't paid very well.
Mm-hmm.
But they kept the cattle corralled in. Well, then at some point, some guy invented barbed wire to put up a fence around the cattle, and so it kind of did away with the need to have as many. You still had to have them to move them from one place to the other, but you could hem them in.
Wow.
Because I think, like, even wooden fences, they would knock them over and stuff. Yeah. But the barbed wire, they didn't like, you know, because it'll stick them,
right,
you know.
So somewhere out there back in the day, there were cowboys just cussing.
Oh,
the
guy
that made, you what, Frank, I swear. But, yeah. So speaking of the cowboy themes, my folks, when I was growing up, they had these brown leather-bound books on their bookshelf.
Did it smell of mahogany?
Yes, rich mahogany. I was hoping you'd get that.
There's another one. Can get that one.
We would offer trivia, but we've run out of gifts, so we'll just give you a shout out on this next one. If you know what that's from. Many leather bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany. Anyway, I'm kind of a big deal. But my parents, they had these books, and they were from like Time Life, and they were like Western, like it was a series.
Yeah.
You know, back in the day, like when you used to have encyclopedias and things like that. But I'll never forget, like I was fascinated with these books. They're actually giving them to me. I don't even know how that got mentioned, but back before I could even read, like when I was probably 16, read these books, but I would just look at the pictures, you know, because it was like, it was fascinating. It was Old West stuff. But I will never forget the commercial because, and I can't remember the guy's name, but it was like, it was telling all the cowboys, you know, all the outlaws, Billy the Kid, Wyatt Earp, all this, and so, who once shot a man for snoring too loud. Do you ever remember that commercial? Would have been way 80s, but if anybody out there, yeah.
You know, we had an old book that showed like, I'm trying to remember what this book was, but it was this book we kept on the coffee table, mm-hmm. and it was like something to do with government and presidents and like, right. you know. And in the back of the book, mm-hmm. it had all of the presidents from George Washington to the current president, which at the time was Gerald Ford mm-hmm. or something.
Right.
And this is what's interesting is when you got to, this is terrible. When yep. you got to Kennedy's
right.
picture, it was ripped and the top part of his head was ripped off.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's awful.
And I would always, even as a kid, go, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Kind of reminds me of, you ever see the things online where it's like, you know, teachers that have given tests and these funny answers at kids. And one of them was like, if you could say anything to President Lincoln, what would you say? And that kid was like, no matter how bad you want to, don't go to that play. It's like, it's not worth it. You know,
hey,
I know you want to go, but don't.
One more funny story.
Yeah.
So I used to go to what is now Grace Life Church mm-hmm. or Grace something church.
What did the name used to be?
It used to be Loveless Park
yeah.
Baptist Church.
No offense to any of our friends that still go to Grace.
No.
I went to Loveless.
My good friend.
What a terrible name for a church. Loveless.
It was a person's last
yeah.
name.
Yeah.
But my friend Joel actually is a pastor there.
Right.
We were there one time. And the guy who was preaching that night, you know, Sunday night church, nobody mm-hmm. goes to that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's terrible to say, but.
Right.
Well, I remember they kept encouraging, hey, man, y'all need to start coming to Sunday night church. Like, there's hardly anybody showing up.
Right.
So we started going, and it was so boring. And I remember the guy who would, they let the B team preach on Sunday
right,
night
right. church. Hey, wait a minute. I used to preach a lot on Sunday night. What?
Yeah. So they let this guy preach. I won't say his name because somebody out there that's listening to this is probably related to him or something.
Yeah.
But he was just terrible. Yeah. Like he just was super boring.
Right.
And he would give these trivia fact things. Does anyone know who the president was back in da-da-da-da-da during this time?
Right.
And like he would weave it into a sermon
yeah.
to make it even more boring, I guess. And I remember we're sitting there and he would always ask these things and no one would... You know, you're just sitting there like, oh, man, I hope Taco Casa's open when this thing's over.
Right.
Or whatever, you know. Or I hope I still got some beer left in the refrigerator when I get home.
Gonna need it after tonight.
But so he asks this question. I don't remember what the hell he was talking about, but he asked this question, and it was this long pause. And this old lady in the back goes, was it John F. Kennedy? But she did it, like, after the long pause, and he's about to, well, okay. And then she says, is it John F. Kennedy? And he stops, and we're all kind of, like, startled. And he goes, no, that is incorrect. And he just moves on.
Did he ever give you the answer?
No.
That's funny.
He's like, well, you know what? If you're too stupid to answer, you don't get the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Look it up.
At least she tried.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she was way off.
Right. That's funny stuff. Oh, man. Well, as always, you never know what interesting conversation we get into before we get to what we're here to actually talk about. But I would encourage you, most times we do a podcast episode, it's probably a standalone, but obviously it would be very beneficial in a series. Go back and listen We've got it titled Western Theology Chapter 1. This week we're tackling Chapter 2, so lay the groundwork a little bit more there. But just a quick recap, Brennan Manning, one of our favorite authors, speakers, back in the day, no longer with us. He's at home now, but Ragamuffin Gospel, probably his most known, but Jesse and I've read other things we like from him. What Abba's Child, what else is there that you've...
The Furious Longing of God.
That's right, yeah. And I don't know that I've read that one. I know you like that one.
Well, the funny thing about... the cool thing about Brennan Manning is if you're not a reader... If you go to YouTube and watch, just start watching his sermons, mm-hmm. by, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them,
right,
you've read all his books.
Yeah.
Because it's all he taught. I mean, that's what I love about him. He was just, he was all about the heart of Jesus, the true heart of Jesus, and how he's been misunderstood. Mm-hmm. And that's what he devoted his life to.
Yeah.
And understand, you know, begging for his listeners, his, you know, viewers or whatever, to understand, dare to understand how much God loved them.
Yeah.
And
yeah, he was all about the love of God. Mm-hmm. You know, that we,
yeah,
I think we miss out on so many times. In fact, we're going to talk about God today, actually, in the chapter two. Last week was more on the church, what that is. And just a reminder from that, Brennan's message was Unsettling the Settlers, and where he compare and contrast settler theology versus pioneer theology. Last week, settler theology was the church being kind of pictured as the courthouse, where in pioneer theology it's the covered wagon, which, spoiler alert, if you look at this episode, the artwork our good friend Jared King helped us with, is a covered wagon in a city environment. That's what we had in mind when even we came up with the name Saints and Pioneers, when we feel like God gave us that. So we're all about trying, not always successfully, but always trying to have that pioneering spirit. And even when we're not talking about Western theology, that pioneering theme will kind of always be something that that we talk about. Got great response last week. In fact, several folks just talked about, excited about this series, and just the refreshing kind of nature of viewing God and the church through the lens of settler and pioneer theology. So chapter two gets into the descriptions of God, so we'll get right into it. Settler theology, God is equated to the mayor. One of the words that really came up to me in viewing God through this lens of this one that's in charge, and we, you know, he is in both scenarios, right? Like, he is everything. But in this sense of him using Wes Seliger and Western theology, using God as a mayor in settler theology, one of the words that jumped out to me several times was the word that he was very predictable. What do you think about when you think about maybe painting God in that lens, and obviously the compare and contrast to pioneer theology where he's very unpredictable? What does that say to you when you hear God being predictable or unpredictable?
I think every person who's ever set out to follow Jesus, in the history of people following Jesus, tried to predict what God would do. Mm-hmm. They tried to, that's just our nature. There's a safety in that, to know that if I do this, then God will do this, or he's, you know, if we build this, then he's going to bless it. Or if we, you know, go this way, then, you know, mm-hmm. there's a way, we said it last week, there's a way that seems right to a man. Mm-hmm. That's why that's in there. It's like, there's going to be a way that seems right, but usually it's not.
Yeah.
I think that if you're going to follow Jesus, you got to be okay with disruption.
Yeah.
You just have to.
1,000,000%.
I mean, you got to be okay with the reality that, I mean, that's what I love. I've been watching The Chosen.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a stunning telling of the Gospels, and it just reawakened mm-hmm. some things for me, reading the Gospels and seeing Jesus. People were just downright frustrated with him
mm-hmm.
because he had a connection with God, the Spirit of God. He had a connection with God, and through, you know, spending a lot of time with God,
mm-hmm.
that caused him to make decisions based on that relationship, that connection he had with the Father. I mean, he said it, I don't do a thing unless the Father tells me to do it. I don't go anywhere unless the Father tells me. Like, he had this very strong, very a connection with God in such a way that directed his life, literally.
Yeah.
And that frustrated the disciples, I mean, all the time. Like, yeah. They were constantly in the back of their... And it's almost like he let them live with some of those misconceptions,
mm-hmm.
you know, that... Because they, a lot of times they would come back and say, hey, when you build your kingdom here,
right?
And, you know, let me be on your right hand, left hand, or
Chosen did, you know, a really good job on that.
They did
too.
A great, oh yeah, man,
that was beautiful,
stunning. I mean, I just, it's just the way they wrote all of that's just incredible. But Jesus was constantly turning that on its head, and he wouldn't give them a lot of information
mm-hmm.
because for the settler mind, more information is key.
Right.
More knowledge is key.
Yeah.
And that's the way we have sort of built the church now. It's like, as much, you know, now there is something to say about knowing mm-hmm. knowledge of God, and that's true. But I think we worship almost this element of knowledge yeah. of, if I know all these things, then this will all make more sense to me.
Right.
But in reality, that's not the way of the kingdom. The more we understand and know the heart of God, mm-hmm. not that we can know it, but
yeah.
try and know it in terms of through a relational connection.
Yeah.
It's not that we know more. It's we're more surrounded and comfortable with mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you want to follow Jesus intimately, you have to be comfortable with mystery.
Yeah.
I mean, you just have to.
Well, and that's the walking with. I thought of thinking of the predictability, even going back, and I'm sure there's examples in the Bible before this one, but Moses. You know, Moses is leading the children of Israel, and, you know, all the complaining and all the stuff that we see. And then, you know, one of the times that they're out complaining, they're talking about water. You remember God commands him, well, strike the rock, you know, with the staff that I've given you.
Right.
So he strikes a rock, water comes out, whatever. Well, then he finds himself in this situation again. And the predictable response to God is, well, we need water. He's going to tell me to hit the rock again.
Well,
right?
He beat the hell out of that. He did, didn't he?
Yeah. And it kind of cost him, but you know, God says, speak to the rock. Well, he just goes, well, God did it this way. And then, you know, for the New Testament, I was thinking of Jesus. We've been in Matthew with the church at Southside. And, you know, just even the amount of healings that we've already seen.
Yeah.
You know, even just take blind people. It's like sometimes he speaks. Sometimes he touches them. One time he gets down and like spits in the dirt and makes a mud like paste and that
gross.
Puts it, or, you know, yeah, it's like, I mean, if anybody's going to do that, the Savior of the world, you know,
yeah.
the Son of God, it would be the one. But, you know, even those ways in which he would heal, you know, it's like you just never can figure him out. There's a wildness
yeah.
there. And I thought about the song, and I won't begin to quote it, but that you wrote, I believe it was about Gideon, you know, the wildness of, you know, just that relationship with the Son. But that really, that wildness springs from a wild and unpredictable God.
Right.
In fact, I would be as bold to say the only thing that is sure, if you're a listener out there that feels like you have God figured out, the only thing sure is that you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't believe even those that walk the closest you know, with God, that he doesn't throw something in there at times that it's like almost, it's not almost, it is a dependence on walking with him.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, you're not going to be able, even as a believer with the Holy Spirit, if you're just trying to go on your own and go that predictable route, like more times than not, you're not going to be in step with what God would be calling you to do.
Well, it's like John 15, you know, he said, look, if you want to bear fruit, if you want to be fruitful, if you want, you know, to be fruitful in ministry and in life. Now, fruitful meaning kingdom fruit, mm-hmm. not more money, more, you know, power and all that. Like, you have to be connected. You've got to be rooted in God. You have to be, like, it, you just can't survive any other way, you know? I mean, it's just an eternal circle of frustration if you're not, you know?
Yeah.
Or until you settle, you become a settler, and you go, okay, well, this is all there is, and I'm just going to settle for the program, the buildings, the check in the box, and that's just...
Isn't that kind of an interesting thing, a double meaning there? Like, obviously, the word settler theology is these people that have found somewhere and settled down, like they've hunkered in, like life on the trail is no longer appealing and all of this. But that word itself, settle, just resign yourself to, again, this is just what it is, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't plan to share this, but I just keep feeling this story, so I'm going to share it, and that maybe one person out there needs it. But have I ever shared with you my Orlando story? This is way, way back. Morgan, I'm guessing.
Is this the Disney World thing?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Morgan, you know, I'll tell you this. I know Bradley was like potty training, which I would highly not recommend going to Disney and Universal in the midst of potty training. But, you know, side note. But we're there, and I know it wasn't Make-A-Wish, you know, foundation, but it was something like that, an organization like that. And his family had a handicapped child, and you could tell, like, he was not in good health. You know, he's in a motorized, like, wheelchair. But they're with him, and I can picture exactly where I was at. I know we're waiting in line, and it infuriated me back then because we're waiting in these long lines in the summer, in the heat, waiting to get autographs from, you know, the Disney characters. And all the while, I'm knowing it's probably a 13-year-old kid that can't wait to get on a smoke break, you know? Like,
yeah.
So anyway, we're standing there. Buzz Lightyear, it's all the Toy Story people where we're at. And I see this family, and very plainly, and I'm like, Jamie's in line with the kids. I'm standing there with like our buggy full of stuff. You know, like, I think Bradley was like young enough to be like, you know, pushed in that.
Yeah.
So all the stuff's there. I'm sitting, I'm just like frustrated, like, let's go do something fun, you know, whatever. And I see this family, and very plainly, God's like, go tell them I love them. Like, that was all that I got. And, you know, I mean, I'm in ministry.
Yeah.
That should be a pretty, you know, pretty easy thing. But the unpredictable, just surprise moment of that was just like, God, that's weird. You know, first off, it's like, they're obviously in a difficult time. And like, I don't want to interrupt family. Like, I'm trying to over-spiritualize and Jesus juke my way into like not listening to Jesus, which is kind of ironic in itself. And so, go tell them I love them. Well, you know, I've told this story before. I would love to say, like, right then, like, I, you know, walked up to them, hey, God loves you. Their whole family repents. It's this beautiful moment. Well, the moment ends where I don't do anything.
Mm.
And we go back to our room that night. And I mean, this is in Orlando, Florida, you know, a billion people, you know, in all these parks.
Yeah.
And I remember being so bold that night. It was like, God, if I ever saw those people again, if I ever saw them again, I would tell them how much you love them. And like, I'm sorry, you know, and God's gracious. Like, he, you know, there's forgiveness in that part. Well, to make a long story short, I wound up seeing them two more times that I just completely avoid the situation, almost acting like, oh, nope, I didn't see them. Like, you know, knowing that God knows I've seen them. And I don't know why it was. It's other than boiling down, it's like I just didn't want to feel like I was doing something to bring about this attention or like make me feel silly to walk up to a stranger.
Yeah.
Well, bottom line, it comes down and I see them this last time. And it finally, it was just like, God would not. It's like, please, like, go. Like, there's something here for you too. Yeah. Like, go tell them that I love them.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just hit me at that moment. And it's so funny because the motivation was not to look strange, you know, to these strangers.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, like, they get away from me. And I walk out into this food court area. I can tell you, I mean, it was like a covered shed. They had the mist fans out there because it was literally like 202 degrees mm-hmm. on the asphalt. And I remember praying. It's like, God, if you want me to find them, like, you've got to give me your eyes. I've got to. And man, when I prayed that prayer, it was almost like a Red Sea parting of like zoomed in on them. So by this time I'm weeping. You know, I didn't want to look strange. I run up to the people and like, and this was Fat Keith days, or maybe not fattest Keith, but fatter than I am now. Out of breath, run up. Hey, and remember, I'm not wanting to look strange, right? Like the first time I could have just walked by him and says, hey, God loves you. And now I'm like, you know, crying, God loves you and all this stuff. And I've never shared all the details of that. At least not in a setting like this, I would with you later of what some other things that happened. But I felt led to do something. I did that. You know, man, I know you're going through a hard time and God just wants you to know like he loves you. And we were at SeaWorld that day. And all I can remember from that, I never saw them again other than this. So if you happen to be listening and you're that family, I'd love to connect. Won't put it past God to do something like that. But they were sitting to our right, and I remember them having a video camera, like videoing like Shamu out there splashing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they lock eyes with me, and you can tell like they're crying, and they point at me and they turn the video camera and are videoing.
No.
Yeah, like just, I guess just to have like, you know, hey,
I never heard this part.
Yeah, this was
that's the best part.
Yeah.
How could you leave that out?
I don't know. But I say all that to say the unpredictable nature of God is like, if we're truly walking with, and again, I wish the story was like, yeah, he told me the first time I went, but he was so gracious. I mean, I ran into these people like five times before I ever did what God called me to do.
Yeah.
And the irony is I wanted to not look strange and probably handled it the strangest fashion possible.
Mm-hmm.
But that unpredictable of just walking with, and like the predictable thing is just like I handled it the first time. And while that's not really that outlandish a thing, like in our modern society of just walking up to a stranger and no context,
yeah.
Like I've just never been a fan of that. But when God's in it, it obviously meant something.
Yeah.
So I'd encourage, like, if there are those unpredictable things that if God just doesn't let you rest, and again, I don't think praying for confirmation or asking him to give you more information is necessarily a bad thing.
Right.
But to follow through, that it's not just for that person that God really does a work. Like, he changed a part of my heart.
Yeah. I was going to say that's probably, I'm sure it was good for them, but it was probably more for you than it was them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because like, look at life now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't navigate without listening to God now.
Yeah.
Like leading a church,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we're a part of.
There's another unpredictable. I've told folks before, it's like, I'd never be a pastor.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Pastor Keith, sometimes that's what people call me. I prefer Keith, but anyway, that's part of the title there. So anyway, predictable. I love this. Wes Seeliger says this, that the mayor, if you're talking about a settler theology, the mayor's main concern is peace and quiet. He controls the courthouse. Again, going back to last week, the courthouse being the church, right? He controls the courthouse, runs the town, law and order, following rules, reign supreme.
Mm.
What about that in God and the whole rule following and all that stuff, you know, being the good boy and good girl that just checks off all the boxes every day versus walking with? What does that look like? What's the difference there?
Well, I mean, if you, we were created for intimacy with God. We were created to be connected to him, to be rooted in him, to follow the just that wild wind mm-hmm. of God, you know, the Spirit of God,
yeah.
the unforced rhythms of grace, as Eugene Peterson says.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we were created for. And if you just check off a box, if you just follow the rules, you can, in a lot of ways, bypass all that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, to walk with God is difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be frustrating. I mean, think about
Is that okay to say that it's frustrating? I mean, you just said it, I'm just saying for the listener, is that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think absolutely. So too. Well, and think about the rich young ruler. He comes to Jesus. Mm-hmm. This guy has been hearing about this famous rabbi that's mm-hmm. healing people, that's teaching like no one has ever taught before.
Mm-hmm.
And before this rich young ruler, you know, he would go to the temple. He would do the sacrifices. He would mm-hmm. do all these things. He's been checking it off. He's been doing it right. He's got his silos are filled. Mm-hmm. He's got, you know, the house he wants. He's got all the servants he wants. Everything works out for him.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's like he's been hearing about this new rabbi. So you got to think there was some tug in his heart, like, this has got to be the guy we've been waiting on.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy's been hearing these stories about this coming Messiah his whole life.
Right.
And he goes to Jesus, and he's like, and he's probably hearing about, you know, they're sort of nomadic. They don't stay in one place. They mm-hmm. give all their money to the poor. They, you know, he spends all his time with the poor. This guy probably spends most of his time avoiding the poor mm-hmm. and just giving money to the church and letting the church handle it, you know.
Right.
And he comes to Jesus thinking, because he's all about settling the accounts.
Mm-hmm.
That's what his life's about, spiritually, yeah. emotionally, like, you know, his financially. He's all about, but there's something in his heart. There's an account. There's this unsettled part of his heart
mm-hmm.
that he's like, this is unfinished. It's something's off about it. So I'm going to go mm-hmm. to this guy that I've been hearing about. He feels this tug in his heart, and he goes to Jesus, and he says, look, you know, what do I have to do? I've done all the... He's like, well... And Jesus looks, and Jesus look. I feel like he just looks into his life, mm-hmm. and he sees all the lists that yeah. are checked off. And it's almost like he's, well, you know, have you kept the commandments?
Mm-hmm.
You know, have you done the sacrifice? You've done this, and yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Jesus said, well, one thing you must do. Go sell everything you have and come and follow me.
Yeah.
And it just completely turns his whole world upside down.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes away sad.
Yeah.
You know, that he can't settle that account. He can't settle that part of himself. Everything else is done. Everything else is checked off. Everything right. else is, he's made arrangements for everything else in his life. But there's this one place in himself that he just cannot reconcile.
Yeah.
And the only person who can reconcile that is this rabbi named Jesus that mm-hmm. he's been hearing about. And he goes to him and he walks away sad because yeah. he cannot reconcile that part of himself.
Right.
And it's like, I mean, we can be good rule keepers. We can be moral people, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the life in Jesus requires more than that. I mean, that's what Jesus was saying, the Sermon on the Mount. He's like, you've heard it said,
mm-hmm.
don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't. But I'm saying, if you even think these things, there's this part of you that wants that to happen or wants yeah. to commit these things. Like, you're, I mean, Jesus wasn't saying that to give you more rules.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying that to say, you are all in need of redemption.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Right.
And the only way to get that is through belief, is through trust, mm-hmm. is through childlike faith, is through returning to wonder, is returning to mystery, it's in connecting with your heart and soul to this man named Jesus, the Spirit of God.
Yeah.
And it's a different deal because, you know, in reality, if we are trusting the Spirit of God to walk with the Spirit of God, and we're guided by the Spirit, all of those rules, all those things we've been trying to keep, I mean, it's the cart before the horse, you know? It's like, I can try and keep all these rules, or I can entrust myself to the Spirit of God and let Him begin to pluck these desires for these things out of my life, you know, which is a long process, which requires a lot of time with Jesus, a lot of emotional, you know, upheaval, unearthing things that you don't want to, you know, you don't have to unearth anything. You don't have to, go into the recesses of your own soul to check off a box.
You said the childlike faith, and this will include one of your children that God just brought to mind a story. I actually meant to share this with you the other day, but so my little girl's birthday was just the other day. She'll always be my little girl, right? Even though now she's had a little girl of her own.
Yes, indeed.
Which, by the way, I had the best FaceTime in the world yesterday Morgan FaceTimed me with Ellie, and she heard her papa's voice and smiled, so I screenshot it, and like it just made my whole day.
That's awesome.
But I was looking back for an old picture, and it was one of my favorite pictures. I knew I'd posted on Instagram years ago. Morgan's jumping to me in the pool, got her little swimmies on and everything, and just the faith that took. And then years later, we recaptured, like, I don't know, Morgan's in college and jumping to me in a pool. And, was looking back on that. Well, around that same time, I had a picture that I'd posted of Tegan, and she was at our kitchen table. We had kept, I guess it was all the Southside kids for Easter, you know, sometime around Easter, and we was letting them decorate eggs and let the parents go and have dinner or whatever. And I had bought these things that I'm going to have to say, for once, I was right over my wife. My wife said, nobody's going to want to use those. And they were the little thing where that you set the hard-boiled egg in there, and it's called an egg-mazing or something.
And it rotates. Spins.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's been a hit now for like a decade plus. Like, we've still used them. So I was right on that one. But the childlike faith of Tegan. Now, I would admit, she's one of my favorites, and she's one of the cutest kids you could see, like personality wise and everything. Her childlike faith was amazing. She was a little off on what she was saying, but she believed it. Okay. She's decorating the egg, and I said, what are you going to do with that egg? She says, I'm going to take it home. I'm going to put it on my pillow, and the tooth fairy's going to bring me some money. I was like, well, I mean, you can try. It's like, but that faith was like, oh, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. But I need to find that picture again and send it to you. She was like so young there. But yeah, it's like, I'm going to decorate that egg and put it on my pillow. The tooth fairy's bringing me money.
Oh,
God, if we could have that kind of childlike faith, right?
Yeah.
So settler theology, the predictable God. God as the mayor, pioneer theology, equates God to the trail boss.
Mm.
I always love this part. So the trail boss, here's my favorite line. And again, this is, I believe, in Brennan Manning's Unsettling the Settler. He actually quotes this line as well. Maybe that's why I like it. But the trail boss, Wes Seliger, says this. He lives, eats, fights, and sleeps with his men. He is nearer to them. That's a hard word, nearer. He is nearer to them than their own boots.
Mm.
Their well-being is his concern. Again, to contrast the other, the mayor's main concern is law and order and following the rules.
Right.
But the trail boss, the fellow pioneers, their well-being is his concern.
Mm.
And I hope when somebody hears that, I know this is a, you know, 1970s illustrated book. I mean, you talk about my speed. This chapter combined with pictures is probably 6 pages.
Yeah.
But the truth of our God that is in this, of, I hope that when you compare and contrast, that knowing that we do not have this long gray beard sitting God on the throne that is just watching your every move of like, you better not mess this up, versus an active, willing participant in our lives, like the trail boss.
Yeah.
That's like, hey, no, let's hop in the wagon and let's go pioneering together.
Right.
And your concern is my your well-being is my main concern.
Right.
You know, that I love you. I care for you deeply. And I just got to say something like the grace idea. I said I was going to share something about my devotion. I think this is a good time. A concept on grace that we very rarely think about. It was reading this passage this morning. It was talking about the grace that's been given. And it was the New Living Translation, but it said grace that's been given. And I just had the thought, I know this is so elementary, but it was so deep for me this morning. The only way that we can receive grace is there has to be a giver of grace.
Yeah.
You can't manufacture grace on your own. You can't be good enough. You can't cry out enough. There has to be somebody willing to give that grace. Like, you could beg for grace to everybody you ever see. If they're not willing to give it, grace is not going to happen. It's that unmerited favor of something you don't deserve.
Right.
You can't manufacture it. You can't beg for it enough. I believe that God initiates that. Like, that we love him because he loved us first. Mm. Where I would differ from maybe our Calvinist brothers and sisters is I believe that's offered to everyone. I believe that God wants that from every person, that he's offering that actively every day in our life. And I hope that image of the trail boss of like, he's not off in some courthouse somewhere ruling with an iron fist of like checking off like Santa Claus, you know, the naughty and nice list. Like, he's walking with us. He's riding with us saying like, let's go on an adventure together today. And your well-being is my main concern.
Yeah.
What kind of shift does that make for somebody that maybe views God in that holy, and he is, he's all these things. I don't mean to paint it like this, but that only version that they have is the holy, 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 and he's on the throne, he's unapproachable versus a walking with. What's the difference there in your mind?
Well, first of all, thing about grace, most people are pretty decent or more comfortable with giving and showing grace to someone, but we suck at receiving it.
Mm. Yeah.
Because here's the deal. When you're giving it, you're in control.
Yeah.
I think even the best person out there that's like, you know, let somebody slide on something they should have done, or they give food to a homeless person, or they, you know, give to this or give to that. I mean, it gives them control in every way. Mm-hmm. It gives them control over their own emotion because they're like, I did this good thing, so I can feel good about it. It's almost like an emotional collateral. Mm-hmm. I've reconciled that account for now, until next week, and then I'm going to feel like a shitty person again. I need to redo, right. You know?
Yeah.
So we suck at receiving, though. And what did Jesus say to Peter when he went to wash his feet? He's like, no, you got to let me do this.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to do for you. This is symbolic. I'm going to do for you what you cannot do for yourself. Mm-hmm. And if the irony is, if we can be better at receiving, we would be better at living and being a life that gives.
Yeah.
But we just suck at receiving it.
Man, you're preaching to the choir right now, and I might get emotional, but I think I've been in a season of trying to learn this. And I'm not saying God gave me cancer, because I don't believe that, but I believe that he's used it. Mm. One of the toughest things for me, and it's not that I'm, you know, if you hang out with me, and Jesse obviously does more than most, will know that I'm self-deprecating a lot of times, and to a fault, you know, a lot of times. I don't sit around and brag on myself or whatever. But as far as life goes, you know, I think it's with the pastor's heart. A lot of times I am the one, you know, that's in a serving role. And when I had that experience come about, And I had to be the one that received and let others, like, you know, I was out of teaching for a long time, like, you know, all of this stuff. And it's like, I'm laying there in a lot of sense, like helpless and like hurting and, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, all these things. And it was just that, you know, one of my sisters mentioned to me, Shay, she's like, you know, this is just a season of receiving. Like, you just got to take it as a reset and, you know, a rest. And so I thought that brought about some things in me. It's like, why am I having such a hard time receiving this? And it's like, there's still some things in there where it's like, I don't feel worthy to receive that. It's like, no, let me, and that control part is a part of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think, you know, I believe it, but I'll stand before our folks that's out there on the streets in Birmingham and tell them, like, I don't care if, like, you are hung over right now. I don't care if the needle marks are still in your arm. Like, it doesn't matter what you've done. But then somehow when I look at my own heart, to receive that grace is so much more difficult than to give it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's a, yeah, deep preaching to the choir there. I need to hear that. So that's real talk there.
Yeah.
But
I don't even remember the question you asked me.
I don't either. And that's okay. That's okay. We all have those senior moments.
I was going to circle back to it, but I forgot how to get back to it. So
hey, it'll come back.
Yeah, that's fine.
Circle the wagons, man.
Yeah.
Circle the wagons. I love this one. He goes on, he says, if you're, and I'll preface, if you're listening, you're saying, God, I find myself in that settler camp. And I would say hang tight, because you probably will find, every listener will find themselves kind of mixed between the two, I think.
Yeah.
Probably more mix of settler than pioneer. You say, well, God, what does that say about me? I loved this line that he follows up with, the well-being part. He's talking about the trail boss, God. He says, he never gives up on the pioneers, but he cares for all people, settlers and pioneers alike.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he desperately wants the settlers, like, come away with me, right? Like, leave the comfort. Because let's be honest, I think the comfortable part of following Christ is one of the things that we probably got to ditch. Because if we're really walking with him, it's going to put us in some uncomfortable situations.
Yeah.
If you're finding everything comfortable, I would just encourage seeking him and saying, like, what do we need to disrupt here?
Right.
And that's so anti, but, like, man, it just, it matters so much to step out of that comfort zone. I go back to one of the times that God just, man, spoke to me as if he was, you know, on a mic here with us, of when we stepped out of that journey of just God bringing gently that question in my mind, is like, what are you doing right now that requires faith?
Yeah.
And the honest answer was, not a lot.
Yeah.
Other than trusting in someone I can't see for my salvation.
Right.
But on the daily, there's not a lot of faith required. You know, the full refrigerator, the full closet, the roof over my head, the doctor when I'm sick. It's like, I don't need you.
Yeah.
And I don't, I promise you, I say that with tears in my eyes. Like, I'm not, that's not from an arrogant place. It was a realization of, oh my God, I'm living a life where I don't need him. Other than, if I was to die today, I can stand before him and say, yeah, thank you, Jesus.
Yeah.
But, like, daily, I'm not doing anything outside of myself.
Right.
You know, I was in that following the rules and just checking off boxes too. And God, it still creeps up.
Well, and I think there are two things that I think people need to understand that I want to mention. Is one, there are a lot of people that will listen to this. And the first, you know, this idea of being, living in the safe, insulated, you know, Constantinian world where everything's the way it should be, versus the wildness of the Spirit of God. And the first thing is like guilt. Like, I should be on the trail with God, or I should be, first of all, guilt is not from Jesus. It never has been.
Yeah.
It never will be. So recognize that right now. That is the voice of the enemy to try and keep you in that world.
Right.
The second thing is the interior world of a human being, the soul, is vast. Mm-hmm. It's massive. Like everything is transformative in a person's life happens in the heart. Now, it may become from outside affecting us, but it always happens in the heart. So this idea of being following this wild God, it happens first and almost always the most in your interior world, which that's good news for that person who's a pastor of a little podunk church and, you know, in the back 40 of Alabama, mm-hmm. you know, wears a suit and tie every day, that's maybe listening and going, man, it happens in your interior world first. Mm-hmm. And in time, it carries to your exterior world. Yeah. But it's always an inward work. I mean, that's the transformative work of Jesus. That's the restorative work. Yeah. You know, what did he say? Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Mm-hmm. Like, that is something that it happens on the inside. So, like, there is no room for guilt in this. And it's just about devoting your life to listening to the Spirit of God, whatever that looks like. You know, we talked about that a few weeks ago or a few podcasts ago about what it looks like to connect with God on a daily, it starts with that. And it moves it deep down, and then it eventually will translate. I mean, that's the way it worked with us with the mm-hmm. church at Southside. We went, you and I both have been on staff at other churches, and mm-hmm. man, that movement of God, that wildness of God led us to where we are now. Mm-hmm. And it's not, we didn't do this of our own.
No.
Like, you look back at this, like, I just see the hand of God in every part of this, and every step, every place I've been, whether it's the institutional church or, you know, a retreat or a fishing trip with a bunch of guys, everything has been like these stepping stones, these little moments where God has shaped me a little bit more mm-hmm. to get me to a place now where this is starting to affect my exterior world. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, my wife and I, you know, joined this little group of people that mm-hmm. minister to homeless people. We sold our house and bought land in the country mm-hmm. to start a farm. All these upheavals happened mm-hmm. because it happened first in my interior world. Mm-hmm. And so it's like we have to give ourselves room and be patient with ourselves and, you know, find that momentum of the Spirit, that mm-hmm. unforced, like, there's so many people, I'm even thinking of people right now that will hear this. Oh, yeah, I'm going to start a small group, mm-hmm. and I'm going to do this. And then they'll get 6 months down the road, or maybe not even that long, and the small group's dried up. They're back where they were. Because it was all motivated by the wrong things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and there's a self-calling in that versus actually listening to God. It's like the small group may be the answer, but it also may not be,
you know,
if you rush to do that. So one of the things with Pioneers and Settlers I was thinking about, I think it was, wasn't last hunting season, it was a hunting season before that. You and I were hunting in the big town of Sprott, Alabama.
Yeah.
And I joked because I was currently at that time reading a big biography on Daniel Boone. It was an amazing book.
Yeah.
And I laughed because I sent Jamie a selfie as I was sitting in a shooting house with a heated vest and a mug of coffee. And I said, just like old Dan Boone would have done it. And she's like, yeah, I don't think so. I was like, well, I guarantee if he could have, he would have, because this is nice.
Right.
But in that book, one of the things that struck me, Daniel Boone is fascinating. There's, you know, way too much to get into on that. But one of the things that he would do, you know, he would survey land. He was a land surveyor, which, by the way, they would look back, and I don't know that he was very good at it. Because they would go back and talk about discrepancies, and it was all kind of lawsuits and things like that. It's kind of fascinating. But and he never wore a coonskin cap. So, sorry to break your hearts out there for any Daniel Boone enthusiasts listening to this podcast.
Was it Daniel Boone or Davy Crockett that we credit?
Both. Yeah. Oh, okay. But Daniel Boone never wore one. But but with him, what he would do is he would be granted these pieces of land for his work and everything, and he would settle it. But every time he would settle it and get everything just right, he would leave and go pioneer some more.
Mm.
And it really did bring about a stark contrast. Like, you know, nothing wrong with him. I probably would have done the same. But I picture some of the folks like coming from Europe and, you know, hitting the shores of this new world as soon as they could, grabbing a spot and like, yeah, I'm good here. Like, yeah. I'm going to settle. The journey was long enough. But then you had those others of just think, God, the pioneering spirit and the, you know, they had trail bosses as well. I know we're equating this to God now, but people that were in leadership and pressing on. And I mean, places where like they're in covered wagons with no roads. They literally would have to cut through miles and miles of forest. And, you know, got news for you. I don't know when it was invented, but no chainsaws, none of that stuff. It's like the rough and kind of, if that gives you a visual of, I think, what God, what kind of life God is, the wildness of God draws us into is not this safe little conformed just existence and, okay, now you've got your salvation, so you're just, you know, all bets are off. Like, you don't need me anymore. It's, no, it's a daily dependence of, like, if we truly are tuned into the Spirit and listen about how much more adventure he's really calling us into that we miss, you know, with the idea of God being the mayor, the one that's just up there keeping the rules and making sure law and order. It's like, no, he's much more likely to be out there with us and calling our hearts into some adventure. And your adventure is going to be different than, you know, mine and Jesse's, right? Like, I mean, I think if he goes to the lengths to create us so differently with the different personalities and different, you know, backgrounds and all these things, like our callings are all going to be to point people to him, but they're all going to be kind of wrapped in different, you know, packages and different stories. But I think you'll find adventure in every one of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're quick to kind of push that to the sides. Like, yeah, I don't have time for something that wild. I need to check that Sunday, Wednesday. I'm good, but don't mess with my Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Like, I got that handled. Right.
Well, I know for a lot of people too, I really felt compelled to mention this because I think when you start to embrace the fact that God is not, that the Spirit of God, his movement in our lives is not conventional, it's not predictable. Mm-hmm. You start to embrace that and you start to actually enjoy that.
Yeah.
One of the byproducts of that is feeling unsettled.
Mm-hmm.
And I have felt that in this season of my life. I have a very 9-to-5 job.
Mm-hmm.
And I am super thankful for my job. I really am.
Mm-hmm.
I have good insurance. I have good retirement and all that. But there have been many days where I'm at work and I just want to dump it all. I just feel this just like, just the confined of it. Mm-hmm. And I do, God has made it very clear that this job is a season. It's, mm-hmm. it's not something I'm going to be at very long.
Right.
Which, probably shouldn't have said that because I got people from work that listen, but oh well, sorry.
Yeah, he's talking about his last job, folks. Yeah. Don't.
Yeah. This was recorded in 2017.
Hold on a minute. Let's start over. Coming to you live from 2012.
But he's made it very clear to me that this is temporary. This is a temporary season. And so I come to work
some
days. Which
temporary, for those listening that may be employers of Jesse, temporary could be 20 years.
It could be. Okay. It really could be.
So,
but like this is a temporary season of life. And so what do I do? The question I've asked, like, God, what do I do with that spirit that is a fingerprint of God? It's mm-hmm. traces of God himself in my life that I just want to cut and run and go somewhere new and do something different.
Yeah.
And that feeling has to be bridled by the Spirit of God.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot be left unattended.
Yeah.
Because it will make you make some stupid ass decisions. Mm-hmm. It really will. Right. I mean, in the past, I have made dumb decisions. Mm-hmm. I've made some stupid decisions thinking, you know, and I won't get into what those are, but
yeah.
I've made some dumb decisions based on that feeling, based on that upheaval. That, mm-hmm. And now I've learned, I guess, wisdom, you mm-hmm. know, I've learned to be a little bit more wise in my, you know, older age. It's like I've learned that. No, we stop and pray.
Mm-hmm.
We stop and we take this feeling to God. Like, God, I bring this just unsettledness to me. And sometimes God wants you to sit in that feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes that's, I mean, that is, I mean, that the disciples, for 3 years, they sat in that feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until when they finally, when Jesus died and was rose and you know, we see in the stories through Acts and stuff, then they started to understand what that tension was in their lives. They started to see the gospel fleshed out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm at. I'm at this place in my life where I am unsettled, and God says, no, you cannot cut and run. You cannot leave.
Yeah.
You will not. We won't. You're not doing that yet. You know?
And there is this thing. I go back to a real life example here of, it was even before you started helping with the church at South, and this is before it was even at my house, before you came and led worship those times. In fact, I don't even think we were the church at Southside. I think we had, you know, left from a church plant that we were helping with, just a group of followers of Jesus sitting around a living room, you know, at this point, like, what are we going to do, you know? And that was when I started feeling like, hey, I think we're supposed to plant, you know, I think we're supposed to plant this church. And didn't have a name, all this stuff. And I remember so naively sitting around with, man, at that time, probably, you know, 30 people crammed into my living room. And the very first thing I did, you know, we had prayed, obviously, you know, to even be at this point. But the prayer stopped with, should we plant a church? And it was like, you know, we got the direction. And so we're going to do that. But what I didn't pray about was, and I never will forget, it was in my living room. Had a whiteboard on an easel in my living room, dry erase marker, and we're writing all this stuff that we're going to do, like as a new church. All these wonderful ideas, you know, all these programs, all these, you know, the small group and all this stuff. And we had this long list of stuff on a whiteboard that, you know, in and of itself, nothing was wrong with the stuff. It was all good stuff. It was a good aim.
Right.
We'd prayed about none of it. And at the end of the day, I would say, like, to this day, we probably do one of the 30 things we wrote on the board.
Mm.
And that was, you know, that we have homeless people, you know, involved in our story, mm-hmm. you know, and that we're involved in theirs. And there is, it, you know, but that was even a different form and a different shape back
right.
then.
Yeah.
And that was really more of an inclusion because we knew so many that were in that situation that we wanted to be a part of what we were doing. It was not wrapped like it is now.
Yeah.
And that just shows us, like, I think that's what happens to a lot of churches. They break out the whiteboard, if you will, and start writing, well, we're going to do this and we're going to do that and we're going to make a difference in our community, and all with well-intentioned hearts. But it's like, would you rather have what man has dreamed up on a whiteboard or listen to the Spirit of God, this right. trail boss that says, no, I'm going with you.
Yeah.
I mean, you can try to do it on your own. You can come up with the list and all of it, even to honor me.
Right.
But if I'm not in that, I promise you, we're going to do more with you, less with your 30 things that you've written down, more with my one thing I've called you to over here.
Right.
We're going to accomplish more doing this together than you could ever do over here on your own, just checking out, well, we did this week. We did that this week.
Yeah.
And so I think that the takeaway, and you're going to see this a lot in the settler versus pioneer theology, is really that walking with. Because I feel like the, you know, epidemic that is involved in the church right now as we speak in 2024 is that we try to manufacture and come up with ways to impact our community or things. And we don't just simply sit and say, unless God calls us to XYZ, we're not going to do that.
Right.
You know, let's see what he wants for our community. Cause I'm just going to say his plans will be better than our plans.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I think we'll see that theme come up a lot. So.
Yeah.
Hope folks out there listening enjoyed, and God's speaking. If got any thoughts or any follow-up questions or anything like that, don't hesitate to reach out to me or Jesse, either one. That's why we're doing this, is just a journey together to seek that pioneering spirit and follow and walk with. So,
yes, sir.
Anything you got before we close out?
I think we've ended on a good note.
All right. Well, folks, we hope to have you back with us the next time, and we'll see you soon.